And now we are operating a text line at 492-KHSU. Now, here's Linda.
Hi, good evening, and welcome to Thursday Night Talk. My name is Linda Stansberry. I'm a staff writer with the North Coast Journal. Tonight we're going to be talking about the presidential election, local election, and role of women voters. I'm joined in the studio by Diana Berliner, who's a volunteer of the local Democratic Party, Louisa Rogers, who is a consultant and local coach. She teaches communication. And by phone is Sophia Pereira, who is a city council member in Arcata. How you guys doing?
Good. Great.
Sophia?
Hi there.
Hi. All right. Well, I wanted to start talking a little bit about women's suffrage. I mentioned in our show's promo the 19th Amendment was ratified a little less than 100 years ago. And I thought it might be illustrative of the experience we have in the studio tonight to talk about the very first presidential election that we voted in. I'm thinking for me, that was the 2000 Bush v. Gore election. What about you, Diana?
I have to think back which election that was. I think, because I'm much older than you are, I think it might have been in...
No pressure. So,
okay.
What about you, Louisa?
The first election I would have voted in was, would it have been 1974 or... if that's the right year. But I was living in Canada. I had moved to Canada after college, and like a not very smart 22-ish young woman, I didn't get my absentee ballot stuff worked out. So I actually did not really vote first time until the Jimmy Carter election. And I kind of jokingly make the point that until Clinton, I not a single person I voted for ever got in.
Like a curse. What about you, Sophia?
My first presidential election that I voted in was actually in 2008 for President Barack Obama.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, it sounds like we've all had some really varied experiences with this. I remember the... In 2000, when I cast my first vote, I was really excited because I just turned 18, and I'm like, it's a presidential election, you know, and my vote really counts. And then there was the whole debate over Florida, and it was really disconcerting. Do you remember some of your early experiences, Diana?
Well, I was living in New York at the time, and so a lot of the people around me were also Democrats. It was when I moved out to California that I found it was very different, that there were a lot of different opinions, and that was very interesting to me. And hearing some really heated conversations really kind of surprised me. So it became quite interesting. And I remembered now it was Eisenhower running. And I was, of course, supporting Stevenson, so...
Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson.
Oh, that's right. And did you, what did it feel like? That you know, I remember feeling really excited about voting, but what did it feel like to you guys?
Well, for me, it was interesting because I really felt like Adlai Stevenson was so intelligent and that no one else could fail to see that. And I was surprised that yes, people did not think that was the most important thing. That surprised me.
I recently had a conversation with my father about Adlai Stevenson because I remembered that there was at least one election where my parents, who were permanent, chronic Democrats, but there was one election where they split their vote. And I couldn't remember how it went, but my father, who is my only living parent, told me that he, in the end, ended up voting Eisenhower, and my mother voted Adlai Stevenson. And he made the comment that he thinks it's very rare today, that it was much more common 50 years ago where a couple might have belonged to different parties, but it almost never happens today.
That's so interesting. You know, I tend to agree just based on anecdotal experience, but Sophia, I wanted to ask you, because Barack Obama is the first candidate I can think of that really motivated that youth base. And did you see that in your own experience?
Oh, absolutely. So I was an HSU student at the time. So it was my last year. I was the student body president at the time. And I remember we held in the Kate Buchanan room on campus this big election night party. And I remember the room was packed. We had live fans. And I remember when we were watching the election results come in, how special it felt. And when the announcement came in that he won, I mean, all of us were hugging and cheering. And I mean, it was a really exciting time, definitely. I think we all felt very hopeful for what was to come with his presidency.
And Diana and Louisa, have you had similar experiences?
I was very excited when Obama won, too. And at the time, I was at the Democratic office in Eureka with a lot of other fans of Obama's. And when we heard the final decision that, yes, it was obvious he was winning, a bunch of us ran out into the street. We were celebrating out there. And a funny little story to go with that, my husband said, she got so excited about Obama, she never got that excited about me.
I was also I felt deeply emotional. And not long after, I wrote my British family in-laws, my husband is British, and just told a little bit about my experience with Southern parents. I didn't grow up in the South, but I was exposed a lot because my grandmothers lived there, and how I could remember at age 10, on my way to one of my grandmothers, we stopped somewhere and the restrooms were divided. It said, colored women, white ladies.
Oh my.
And they had separate water fountains. This was in the early 60s. And I was telling my British niece, my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, and their children who are adults, just reporting a little bit about what I witnessed a bit of in my childhood. And they were shocked. I don't think they realized that these things were going on even in their lifetime, you know. So it was such an incredible game changer that Obama was elected. And it was
that we could, as a country, could do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I think that's why that generational experience is so important. And I also think I think as long as we're talking about this emotional experience that most of us had around Obama's election, so the four of us, you know, it looks as though we're about to elect our first female president. Why does it feel like, as a nation and as women who follow politics closely, that we're not as emotionally invested or as enthusiastic about this candidate?
Can I chime in on that, actually?
Yes.
Because when we were talking about Barack Obama being elected and how inspiring that night was, I actually thought about how earlier this summer, when it was the Democratic convention and Hillary Clinton accepts the nomination and she's wearing a white suit to pay tribute to the suffragettes, and I cried watching that speech, because I didn't think I was going to get emotional by Hillary Clinton accepting the nomination. I definitely support her being our next president, but I didn't think, oh, I'm going to get really jazzed about it. I was a Bernie supporter in the primary. But it was really moving, and I really felt the historic moment that it was. So for me, I really, surprisingly, and I know a lot of other young women in my life that had the same reaction as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I'm deeply moved, and Hillary is not my perfect candidate. There are things I would ideally like her to have different policy positions on in a few cases, not very many, but a few. But I am deeply inspired that I do believe she's going to be president.
Yes, and I think, too, all the experiences she's had in the jobs she's had and the positions she's been in will make her much better at understanding the issues and understanding what will make things better. So I think that it will be great for the country. I think a lot of people are holding back getting too excited because they're so fearful that that won't be the outcome. And lately, people are very concerned that I've talked to about some of the atmosphere out in public. With yesterday I saw on my cell phone a picture of a rally where somebody was holding up a little doll that looked like Hillary, and it had a noose around its neck. And I cannot remember any time in our recent history where that kind of hatred was being displayed, and it's very scary.
Mm-hmm. And does that feel like a does that feel more personal to you guys because, you know, we share a gender with her?
Oh, definitely. And, you know, a lot of people have a very strong opinion about Hillary based on some of the stories that were created about her that turned out not to have any validity, but the stories keep getting repeated and brought up. And I just think, I ask myself, is that partly because she's a female? I'm not sure.
What kind of stories are we talking about?
Well, years ago, she and her husband had a close friend who committed suicide, and there were Republicans who were saying that they had arranged it, that they actually had had her killed. That just was shocking.
Mm-hmm. I think there's always a lot of spin around presidential elections, and I do, you know, remember vividly during the re-election of George W. Bush. I was living in San Francisco, and there was a very vociferous and, you know, fairly ugly vocal set of people against his re-election. And there were nooses. There was George W. Bush
really?
Looking like
oh.
Satan. And I think that that was coming from a very emotionally valid place after, you know, the beginning of the Iraq War. But I think that also in this election cycle, we have been seeing a lot of what people would call dog whistle sexism, and meaning that, you know, it's just a little under the radar and you're only picking up on it if you know what to look for. Does that ring true with you guys, Sophia?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely dog whistle politics going on, but I think there's also very clear, overt examples of sexism. I mean, the most recent, you know, example that has really, I think, has gotten a lot of women talking on both sides of the aisle, regardless of party, is when in the last debate, you know, Hillary Clinton speaking, and then Donald Trump interrupts her to say, "Such a nasty woman." And we all got, I felt like as a woman, I knew exactly what he was saying, is that she, you know, that she was being out of line. And that if you're a woman that stands up for yourself, that you're being a nasty woman. And that's how I took it. And I know I'm definitely not the only one, that millions of other women heard that and now make it a rallying cry to say, okay, well, nasty women get stuff done,
that's
you know,
true.
And trying to turn it on its head. Okay, you try to make that an insult, but we're going to reclaim it and say, yeah, you know, we're the women that get stuff done.
Nasty, you're such a nasty woman is another version of, why don't you smile more? So what's the matter with this woman? Why isn't she smiling? It's just the flip side of the same sort of thing.
Well, this is true, but then also during the primaries, he was talking about his opponents and calling them small, talking about their spouses, which is, you know, a whole nother level of sexism, talking about the relative attractiveness
of
their spouses, comparing their genital sizes. You know, he's also very aggressive towards men. So, sorry for playing devil's advocate a little bit, but are we seeing something different in the way he reacts to women as opposed to men?
Well, I think it's stronger with the women and more common with him. But I think his problem is that he doesn't have much respect for other people if they don't agree with him. And that is a very scary thing for me to see.
I think it's not just sexism as it is being expressed by the Republican candidate, because during the earlier period of the campaign, even within the Democratic Party, the level of vitriol by some who were some of the people who were in favor of Bernie, which is fine. I mean, that's fine to be in favor of Bernie. But the level, the depth of the hostility and the bitterness directed at Hillary was, to me, beyond just a difference of opinion about her policies or even her integrity. And to me, I felt that was a kind of sexism that would they would not probably have directed had she been a male. Of course, this is not something any progressive person, male or female, and I experienced it from both genders, would ever cop to. You know, what is person is going, what progressive person is going to say or even think, they're probably not conscious of it themselves, so there's no way to prove it. But I felt that degree of bitterness against her had something to do with sexism.
Well, don't you think that has something to do with the tenseness that people have these days? So many things are now beyond our ability to have or to do. If your children are of college age, it's so difficult for families to send them through school so that they can have a career. Jobs for a long time hadn't been available to people who are very willing and trained to work. There's so many things in our current situation. Certainly before Obama became president, it was worse then, where people feel so frustrated that they wanted to have someone who would lead them out of this desert of their lives. And when they saw Bernie come along and say some of the things that other people weren't saying, they felt like he would be like their savior. And then when someone else was getting the advantage, they were frightened.
So before we light the burner, I just wanted to let our listeners know that you are listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU, and you can call in at 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. And we're talking about this year's presidential election and how it affects women voters. Sophia, I wanted to just turn to you real quick because you were an early Bernie supporter. And did you see any of this so-called Bernie bros and animosity going on in that contingent?
Definitely. I definitely felt like the, like Louisa was saying, the level of hostility, I think, sometimes felt unwarranted, and that it definitely went beyond a public policy difference of opinion. So I definitely saw that, and I definitely, when the switch happened to, okay, well now, you know, Hillary's the nominee, and the resistance that happened, and of course it's going to be, not everyone agrees with who the nominee was, so I definitely understand that, but it almost felt like if anyone who was a Bernie supporter became a Hillary supporter, that, like, you've been demonized too by it, and so it just felt like this, this conflict that I think it's an important conversation to have, but yeah, I think definitely it made things uncomfortable at times.
How do you address that when you have the same candidate as someone else, but you don't agree with how they're expressing that enthusiasm? That must have led to some awkward conversations.
Very difficult. I found it very difficult talking to my cousin, who I love dearly. And this is a cousin who lives in Oregon, and she's very progressive. And she disliked Hillary intensely. And we had this conversation side by side. I couldn't look at her. I could not make eye contact with her. It was very difficult for me because of her degree of anger. To this day, I'm not sure she's voting for Hillary. I don't know.
I have heard that there are a lot of people who are intending to vote for third-party candidates. And I wanted to talk about something else. I wanted to mention that I didn't reach out to the Humboldt Republican Women's group and ask them if they'd like someone to come on the air with us, and they didn't get back to me. But I think it's important to establish that women are not a monolith in terms of their support, even with a female candidate. So
true.
Have we looked closely at which policies the Democratic and Republican candidates support that issues that directly affect us, and whether or not their eventual nomination would end up actually helping us as women?
Well, it's been difficult because one of the candidates has not really told us clearly what he would do, and has flip-flop back and forth. So it's very hard to even predict what might happen. But it does seem as though a pattern there has been developing where most of the things would be advantageous to the very wealthy, and some of the promises he made earlier aren't true. I think Hillary's been very forward in expressing what she planned to do, so that I have a better idea of what it might be like. Of course, there's always the situation of Congress deciding to interfere, as they did with Obama. So I think people are puzzled. They're not sure of the future.
Interfere in which way?
Well, for example, in Congress, as some people have told us, some legislators got together and right after Obama was elected and decided not to let him have any significant legislation pass that would have his name on it. And they did a very effective job in general of stopping those things he would have liked to do to make things better.
I have noticed on a list I have of where Hillary Clinton stands on a long list of policies and where Gary Johnson stands, that she is in favor of family leave, minimum wage, child care improvements, and of course, as she very clearly stated, and I was so glad about this, very much in favor of keeping Roe versus Wade and reproductive rights.
Yes.
So from my point of view, she is very pro everybody, but in those cases, she's very pro women's policies that affect women. He, by the way, is not he opposes all of those that I just mentioned.
I believe in the past he did say he supported women's rights in some of those areas.
I think his most recent stance on abortion was that they have women must be punished for having them. Is that right?
I thought that was Trump.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. Of course, you're talking about Johnson.
Yeah.
What about you,
okay,
Sophia? Have you looked over this?
I definitely was going to bring up reproductive health rights. But the thing I actually wanted to touch on is the difference in temperament. And I know it does get talked about quite a bit, but I do think that's important because if you notice in the beginning of the debate, you can tell, like, especially in the last one, it's like Donald Trump is talking in a very soft, calm voice. You can tell that he's really trying hard to keep a calm demeanor. But it seems like it's so easy to get under his skin. I mean, it seems like Hillary Clinton's debate prep team has done an incredible job in terms of doing background research to figure out what his triggers are. And if her campaign team is able to do that, imagine what world leaders around the world are able to do to get under his skin. And that, to me, is what is dangerous. I mean, Diana was talking earlier about, you know, there's a lot of things we don't know what his clear positions are on a lot of different issues. He's not been very policy-driven in his candidacy. And so you take that with someone who has very thin skin, and that's, to me, a very dangerous combination.
Mm-hmm. Well, true. I mean, and playing devil's advocate again, I have to say that... you know, along with personality, I feel like the Republican candidate's personal life and indiscretions have played a very large role in this campaign. And we've had candidates in the past, male candidates, such as, I just lost my train of thought. Let's say many male candidates with a checkered past who have had affairs. And it's only been in the last, I would say, 30 years that this has really had a major sway in terms of their electability. So are we letting his personal life outshadow his qualifications?
Well, I think it goes beyond his personal life. I mean, he has been offensive to women by his own admission, who he really didn't even know, to assume that because you are famous that you have the right to invade people's territory, to these in very, very personal places, is shocking.
I don't disagree, and also I'm not arguing that this candidate would make an effective president. It doesn't seem, just based on his policy or lack thereof, that he would make an effective president. But I am saying that hypothetically, if we had a candidate who was not a great person, I'm thinking, I'm remembering now, I wanted to mention John F. Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Like, from all we know about John F. Kennedy, he basically slept with anything that moved. He was a good president. If we had a viable candidate with a terrible personal life, would that make the difference for us, or are we past that in our culture?
Well, I want to point out that the former French president, Françoise Mitterrand, had a mistress. They didn't call her a lover. They didn't call her a fling. She was a mistress. They had a child together, and they were together for 20, 30 years. She's recently written a book, including letters that they are their correspondence. And it was one of those everybody knows but doesn't know. They didn't talk about it. It wasn't newsworthy. He did go, I think she attended his memorial service when he died. It was known, but it wasn't discussed. I think part of the problem, and it wasn't discussed with John Kennedy, I think part of the problem with the current situation is it's all over the news. It competes with everything else. If Donald Trump simply had affairs, now to me an affair is not a sexual assault. Okay, if he had affairs, that might not be exactly my ethical code, but I'm not going to have a problem with someone who has an affair. Many presidents have. But that's a different thing than sexual assault, and it's also a different thing than it being part of the whole political conversation. And I think, you know, what goes on when he appears in the second debate, not a single person asked one question on climate change. The real issues are completely submerged by his behavior.
So you're saying something others have said, that the news media had a lot to do with what has happened, that it, because it brought up more people watching and listening, reading their newspapers, that they played up the worst parts of what he stood for. And it overtook the issues.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I have to mull on whether I'm going to claim that it's the news media's responsibility. I think it sort of falls on everywhere. It's everybody was involved in that.
As a member of the news media, I want to apologize for that.
Thank you very much. Let the rest of them know.
What do you think, Sophia?
Well, I think this is a very good question, because I think it's actually a very gray area, and I think, Linda, what you're saying about kind of this trend and how things are changing over time in terms of what we expect from our public officials and presidents. I don't think there is a very clear answer to that. But, you know, the thing I'm thinking of is that, you know, if there's crimes of corruption, if there's crimes of racketeering, if, you know, someone, you know, if a public official burglarized someone's home, you know, if they're breaking the law, we would want to know about that. On the conservative side of things, you know, there's been a lot of focus on Hillary Clinton's emails. There's a disagreement in terms of whether she broke the law. It's only Donald Trump that's been getting talked about in terms of, negative press on something. I think it is important for us to discuss publicly, okay, if someone's violating the law, if someone... if several women are coming out and alleging that they've been sexually assaulted by the same person over the years, that's something we, I think, as the public need to process and decide, okay, these allegations are coming forward. I personally, choose to believe the women that are coming forward. Not everyone has to do that. I hope they would. But, I mean, that is a part of the conversation. Okay, so if someone... unless that they have committed crimes. I mean, I think that has to be a part of the conversation. I mean, when DUIs happen, even at a local level or a state level, that garners public interest. Because, you know, these are lawmakers. We are public officials. I don't think we should be held to a perfect, unattainable standard, but I think people expect a higher ethical standard or a basic level of decency to operate in, since we are making decisions for other people. on what rules and laws they should also be following. So I think it's natural that people, you know, are taking these sexual assault allegations very seriously. Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. And I want to remind our listeners, you can call in at 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. I'm Linda Stansberry, and tonight we're talking about the presidential election. We do have a caller on the line. It is Maureen from Arcata. Hey, Maureen.
Hi, Linda. Yes. I think it's very important that anybody who represents us, me, I'll speak for myself, anybody who represents me has to have the highest integrity, must never tell a lie, must never do anything that is reprehensible. I want somebody with the, I mean, there's not many. I haven't liked a single president. You know, I suppose Carter came a little closer. I didn't meet him. I went to his church and saw that, you know, he wants to be a Christian, but at the same time goes to war. So there's a contradiction there. And I think that whoever we elect should be free of contradictions. They are not. The form of government that I would choose to have would be representatives sitting in a circle and discussing how this would affect seven generations hence. And then we would be living in a, I think, a harm-free world and would not be in so much trouble. And that's the end of my statement.
Thank you, Maureen. And I think that brings up an important point, which is, you know, how squeaky clean do we need a candidate to be before we elect them? And is that attainable? What do you guys think?
Well, I think that the things, perhaps their weaknesses, should be such that they're not affecting other people negatively, that they're not cruel, that they aren't hurting people, that they do have a platform that would be beneficial to those who need help. I think those are very important qualities. But if they have a flamboyancy that makes their own image or their own personality become the attractive thing, that may not be what it takes to be a leader. We want leaders who make things better.
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say that, I just stated it. It's more of a, we're agreeing amongst ourselves rather than a dictator type, dominator type system that we've been living under for 5,000 years. It would be a cooperative venture, a collaboration, you know, the co-words. And we have not had that for 5,000-6,000 years. So it's time for something different. I mean, we surely can see that. Neither one of these people speak for us. They're both, you know, one of them, I would have to say, is, you know, on the verging on what, not a psychopath, but a sociopath. And Hillary, I don't know where her heart is anymore. I don't see it anywhere. I don't hear it anywhere. And so that troubles me. I mean, I would vote for Jill Stein if I could vote, because I can't, because I'm Canadian. But I've been certainly putting it out there about her, you know, just to have, you know, somebody who's speaking the truth being legitimized rather than people who are lying being legitimized.
Absolutely. Maureen, thank you so much for calling in.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for having the program. Bye-bye.
Once again, I believe Hillary is being held to a particular standard that most male candidates are not.
A much higher standard.
Now, in the case of the fact that Hillary doesn't show much heart, I don't experience her as warm and fuzzy. I don't experience her as usually. Once in a blue moon, I experience, and I shouldn't use that phrase. That sounds sort of trivializing. I don't mean that. But I don't experience her as a person revealing her heart very easily. But I think there are some very good reasons for that. One is, I think she is more of a intellectual personality style, and I don't think that's something you can wire yourself to be different. You can adapt, but I think there are people like that. Secondly, she's part of that generation of women who had to, and it's slowly changing, but had to really hold those gentle feminine stuff, those qualities, carefully in, or she would not have made it to where she is. She wouldn't have gotten there. And to say you don't have any heart, well, did you see George Bush showing heart? I mean, did you see Richard Nixon showing heart? I mean, please, come on.
You know, excellent point.
This reminds me of there's this term that's getting used a lot more where it's talking about this double bind that women experience. And it's not just in politics. I mean, it's women in business. It's women in all types of leadership. But the double bind is that, you know, there's a stereotype of what a woman is supposed to be, you know, kind, compassionate, empathetic. And then we have stereotypes of what leadership is, and they are very much related to what male, stereotypical male qualities are. So to be a leader is to be tough, it's to be competent, it's to be strong. So I think what a lot of women are struggling with, and I think Hillary Clinton is as well, is something I even personally struggle with, is, okay, you know, I want to be kind. I want to be compassionate. But if I'm too kind and too compassionate, I'm seen as a pushover, or I don't have my own opinions. I'm a puppet for someone else, or I'm weak. If I'm competent, I could be seen as tough, but then that could mean I'm seen as cold and heartless.
And a nasty woman.
For others. And yeah, then you're a nasty woman. And so that is the fine dance that so many of us as women and women leaders, regardless of sector, so many of us have had to try and navigate. And maybe that's not the experience for all women, but I know that's something that's being talked a lot amongst a lot of women in leadership positions. A lot of women's organizations are highlighting this issue of, this is why these questions come up about, you know, I just don't really connect with Hillary. It is because she's on this gray area where it's really hard to be both strong as a woman, as a leader, and still be seen as compassionate. And if you're too compassionate, then you're not seen as being strong enough and you're a pushover. And I think that's part of the complicated feelings that people have towards Hillary Clinton, but also towards women leaders in general.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't sound shrill. They hate
no.
that. Oh, no. We do have a call on the line. We have Jake from Eureka.
Hi. I'm just going to bring up the two news stories that came out today on PBS NewsHour. Marcia Coyle from National Law Journal reported the sexual assault allegation against Clarence Thomas. From 1999, it's Truman Foundation scholar who was 23 years old at the time. She's alleging that Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas groped her below the waist and would not let her go. And of course, we all know Clarence Thomas's history from his confirmation hearings and the Anita Hill harassment that Clarence Thomas engaged in. And then now we have also reported on PBS NewsHour tonight is the latest allegation against Trump. Former Miss Finland alleges that at the Miss Universe pageant, of course, owned by Donald Trump, that he came up from behind and grabbed her from behind against her will. And this is over a dozen women now have reported sexual misconduct by Donald Trump. And this is sort of the past couple of weeks that these women have come out since the second debate, since Donald Trump unequivocally stated he has never groped or kissed a woman against her wishes. Now there's all these women who are saying, yeah, Donald Trump's lying about that because he did it to them. So, you know, this is the person that the Republican Party, you know, the Family Values Party supposedly wants us to make president.
Well, you make a good point, Jake, and, you know, I'd have to ask my guest, why do you think the Republican Party is stuck by this candidate, well, more or less?
I think they feel they don't have a choice. I don't think that the people who were considered leaders before this all began would have chosen him if they had known particularly the stories that we're hearing about now. But once he had enough support. They felt, well, he's a Republican, at least it's our side.
Actually, I'm a bit puzzled by the fact that some more moderate Republicans are not, well, they are beginning to now with all this latest issue with Trump and the sexual assault issues. But prior to this, why more of them were not willing to vote for Hillary? Because one of my issues with Hillary is that she's more centrist than I would like. She is not a, you know, leftist Democrat. I wish she were more so. And again, back in an earlier era when things were not so divisive, when there were more conservative Democrats and more progressive Republicans, you sometimes crossed parties and it wasn't considered a sin. And I look at some of Hillary, not so much her domestic, but her international policies, if Republicans didn't have such a blind spot about the fact that she was Democratic, they could probably vote for Hillary internationally and not, it wouldn't hurt them. But they're not able to think rationally. None of us, I think the whole nation is irrational, actually, in that sense. We're not able to recognize that in this case, this is a person who, some of whose policies are not really that adversarially different from what the Republicans, some of the moderate Republicans, might want.
Well, I've heard a theory that she's not really making an effort to win over that support either, because she doesn't want to, she wants to tie those Republican candidates in with Donald Trump in order to secure a Democratic majority in the bottom of the ticket. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jake? How are you feeling about your choices this year?
Well, I supported Hillary Clinton in the primaries. I'm a Democrat, and I thought she was the best candidate. She had the best chance of winning, and I think that's being proven true. Her lead against Trump is quite large, according to the polling averages out there, and I think what we will see is a double-digit victory for Hillary Clinton on Election Day. And I think Hillary Clinton is the most qualified candidate who was in the race. She's best suited to be president. She understands the job, and I'm thrilled, excited, and happy that Hillary Clinton is going to be the first woman president of the United States.
Well, thank you, Jake, and thanks for calling.
Thanks.
So we're on the last quarter of our show, and I just wanted to dip a little bit into local politics. Sophia, is anything that's happened this year kind of ringing a bell with you, or bringing up stuff from your own political career so far?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely been moments that I go, huh, okay, I've experienced that, obviously not on as big of a scale as, you know, as a presidential election, but one example I'll give was when I was running for city council 2 years ago, you know, we were doing candidate forms, and I remember sitting down at the table, and I had my notes prepared, you know, organized by subject areas, making sure that I'm, you know, prepared to answer, you know, any questions that come my way, and making sure that I can clearly communicate those messages to voters. And I remember the person next to me, one of my opponents, makes kind of a comment about, like, look at you, you know, with your notes. This kind of, well, don't you think you're so fancy with your notes? And really, it had a judgmental tone to it, and it was right before we were about to go live. And I remember in that moment, I felt so embarrassed. I was just like, yeah, what am I doing? What? Why do I have all these notes? And I remember watching this debate with Hillary Clinton, and she says, you know, I think Donald Trump just accused me of preparing for this debate. And yes, I prepared for this debate, and I'm also prepared to be the president of the United States. And it was that moment where I was like, why did I ever feel embarrassed? Because I was showing that I, to the people of Arcata, that I took the responsibility seriously. I did my homework. I came prepared because I was prepared to do the job. And that was one moment where I was, even though at the time I felt embarrassed, I did not make the connection. It was seeing her up there and standing up for herself that empowered me to see how, yeah, you know, I did the right thing in that moment of being prepared. And that's what people expect of us, is to show up and be prepared to do the work, and don't let anyone ever tell you differently. So that to me felt really empowering. But I mean, there's definitely lots of moments in my political career, even when I was student body president, where sexism came up, where I didn't even think sexism would be an issue. I mean, I was in college and I just thought the sky's the limit. I didn't think that my gender would be used to undermine my leadership.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of women identified with that moment. I just want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. The numbers to call in are 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. I'm your host, Linda Stansberry, and I'm here with Diana Berliner, Louisa Rogers, and Sophia Pereira, and we are talking about the presidential election. So, going back to what we were talking about earlier with the double bind, Louisa, you teach, you coach people, and you talk about presentation and I assume body language and you know, how to present yourself to other people. What are you seeing in terms of how Clinton presents herself on the national stage?
I think Clinton is very effective. She's calm. She uses her body well. She's measured, she's not, as I said earlier, she's an intellectual style person. She's not a wild enthusiast, but I think she's very calm. I must say, in that second debate when Trump was stalking her, to the annoyance of everybody who saw, I thought she was very cool and very composed. But I did wish, what I would love her to have done, was to have just calmly pivoted around, calmly looked at him and said, "Yes, Donald, how can I help you? Is there anything you need?" And just addressed him, that idiot. But anyway, but of course, she probably would have gotten into trouble to do that. And she did, in fact, was able to stay completely focused. I have a very hard time focusing if someone's hovering behind me. It makes me nuts. It's very difficult to do. So I really give her compliments. So that was excellent body language that she was able to do that.
Do you think that that was a intentional tactic on his part, or was it unintentional?
It's a little bit like your story, Sophia. When you told the story of your opponent commenting on your notes, my thought was he was trying to kind of derail you and rattle you. And, he was feeling anxious and it threatened perhaps by you. So in terms of Trump, first of all, he's so unconscious, it's a little hard to know. He could well have been unconscious, but I think he's also he's a very experienced manipulator. So, yeah, he was invading her space. Invading her space.
We do have a call on the line from Ryan in Eureka. Hey, Ryan.
Yeah, am I on?
Yes, you are.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we know power corrupts. And I don't think there's anybody that's going to get that high up in our political scene that is not going to be somewhat corrupt. And I think that basically the big issues center around legislation on our environment, because, we're still in a very bestial state. That's one of our problems. That's where our corruption comes from. We're tempted very easily. And I can understand how Hillary succumbed to that. But I think that if we don't foster the care of our planet, I think that's really what we're here for, is planet tending and planet nurturing. And Trump is not going to do that. Donald Trump is a pig. He's going to unleash all of the energy restrictions, and he's going to just allow, because he's basically about increasing his own power. And I think that at least Hillary is going to put her energy and her weight in favor of the environment. She understands, in the first place, I believe that the earth is the divine feminine as far as humanity is concerned, and that he has no respect for that, and that she does, at least to some degree. You can never tell. I wonder what would happen if Trump's messages and his past had been hacked, and we could really hear what he was all about. because if you really get down to the nitty-gritty of what's going on inside of people, you know, most of us have a whole bunch of ugliness inside of us, and it will come out, especially when we're in positions of power and we're given, options that will allow us to further our own gains. And I think that's what Hillary and her husband have done, is that they've allowed greed to sway them.
I think at least
she's going to help the earth abide, because if it doesn't, okay, then we're not going to evolve. Nothing is going to happen. I think we're too concerned with the dealings of humanity itself and how we treat each other. When it comes down to it, we're all killing each other. We're cheating on each other. And those things are going to go on irrespective of what we do to the earth. Okay, there's a connection, but all told, I think that the earth stands a better chance of surviving under Hillary's reign, if you will, than Trump's. I think Trump is going to just toss the planet to the predators.
Thank you, Ryan. We appreciate your call. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We only have a couple minutes left.
That's okay. Thank you very much for listening to me.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I just want to double back to you, Diana and Louisa. Why, you know, one of the reasons I wanted you on is because I think between the four of us, we've seen a really wide spectrum of politics. And why are we only getting a female candidate in 2016? Why has it taken so long?
I think a lot of women who are interested in politics don't necessarily run for office. They play a different role often. Down at the Democratic office, we have both men and women who volunteered, of course, but a lot of the work is being done by the women. In fact, at our dinner recently, a group of us women were taking care of the welcome table, where people come in and we look up whether they need to pay or how many visitors they were bringing with them that were paid for, and just making people feel welcome. And I was sitting at a table calligraphying name tags. So there were six of us working, and some of them were running back and forth trying to find out information for people. And the speaker of the day was Tom Steyer, who is a famous environmentalist and quite respected, certainly in California and perhaps in the whole country. He walked up to the table and he said, "It's very interesting to me that all the workers are women." Mm-hmm. And I've thought a lot about why he said that. And I think women in our traditional society have always been the ones who got things done around the house. And the husband was the one who went out in the world and brought home the salary, so it was all possible. And I think women are used to taking care of the children, taking care of the shopping, taking care of the cooking, all the little details. So I think a lot of women who want to be involved in politics don't necessarily run for office, but they support those who do, who they think will do a good job.
This is so women are the workhorses and men are the show ponies a lot of the time in these grassroots campaigns.
That's an interesting way to put it.
A couple things, reasons why I think women, not that many women run for office, is one, still women usually feel they need to prepare more, be more experienced, have something more in their background to justify it. Men don't seem to have this need to justify their desire to run. Mm. They just run, often without the necessary background, but they do it. Women try to shore up their background and spend more time and so on doing it. That's one reason. Secondly, I still feel that women pay more of a sacrifice because the gender roles, if you're raising children and so on, it's still more of a... things are changing, yes, but a lot of women are still more involved in childcare and so on. It's just more of a demand on one's life, I believe, generally still for women than it is for men. And so, therefore, it's a bigger dilemma in a woman's mind. I think that's another reason.
That's a good point. And so we only have a couple minutes left, but we do have a caller on the line, Lori from Eureka. Lori, did you have a quick comment or question?
Yeah, I was wondering, for the women, your speakers who are more politicians or politically involved, does this whole attitude towards Hillary, especially by men here in Humboldt County, has it made you rethink your attitude sort of where as to where your career is going, if you want to be more bold or more concerned? How has this affected you?
Sophia, that sounds like a good question for you.
Yeah, actually, I'm sorry. Could you rephrase the question?
Well, okay. So a lot of men I've heard here who don't like Hillary, they use the adjective scary. Scary? And with an all-women council here in Eureka, I never thought I'd hear scary. So I was just wondering, have things like that affected you?
You know, I was a speaker from personal experience, and I don't think the mudslinging that we see at the national level, at least for me personally, I don't think it's trickled down all that way. So I personally haven't had anything close to what Hillary Clinton has experienced in terms of the overt sexism and the vitriol. But there's definitely smaller things that can start to add up that, you know, definitely can make you worried about how people are perceiving you. You definitely don't want to be seen as too ambitious or, you know, as someone that's stepping stones. And that's always something, as a woman, being ambitious is kind of like a dirty word. So I mean, that is something that I think for a lot of us that we have to struggle with. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but.
Well, I guess, how would you feel if someone described you as scary? How would you address that?
Oh, I mean, I would hope no one would describe me as scary. Yeah.
This is Linda. I've been described as scary before.
Okay,
man. Yeah, it is what it is.
How do you respond?
Well, that has changed over the years. I would have to say in my early 20s when I was still kind of learning what that word meant as a woman, I would say something offhand like, oh, I guess I need to like pluck my eyebrows or something. You know, I must look kind of menacing. And then later, you know, as I paid more attention to what that meant, I would ask them to explain what they meant. And
to give you specifics, perhaps.
Yeah, and, you know, making them think about that word. Well, first, it scares them more, which is kind of funny. but, you know, I think sometimes those conversations can lead to some really interesting places.
Yeah, I guess I just have no comeback for scary. I expect to hear how they feel about the issues, and I can't address scary. I have no place to go with that.
Yeah. I think they would need to tell me what they're scared will happen before I could take that comment seriously. Because generally when people have said that to women, it's just meant, you're a woman, you're not supposed to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Certainly for women of my generation, if you stepped out of your nice persona, it was threatening to some people.
Absolutely. I was watching an interview recently with Madeleine Albright, and she made the comment that she thinks maybe Hillary reminds some people of the last woman they had a negative interaction with. And she was talking about her own political career and said, you know, men have told me that I reminded them of their third grade teacher, of their mother, that I'm too preachy, et cetera, et cetera. It's really hard when people take those preconceived notions and project them onto you when you're just trying to do your job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your call, Lori. We do have to wrap up the show, but that was a great topic to end on. I appreciate that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you. So any closing thoughts and any non-presidential related items that you guys think we should look out for on the ballot this year?
That would take more than 1.5 minutes.
You know, I have something really quick that I would just like to mention for any woman that knows someone that they think should run for office, or if they themselves are interested in running for office. There's just a couple resources I'd like to recommend to kind of get people maybe started and looking into it. There's an organization called She Should Run. So if you go to sheshouldrun.org, you can nominate someone to say, hey, I think you should run for office. And then there's also an online incubator training program where you can learn more about you know, what kind of candidate you would be, what you would run on, et cetera. And that's totally nonpartisan. It's open to all women. And then there's also organizations like the Women's Campaign School at Yale that offer nonpartisan, non-issue-based campaign training for women to run for office. So those are just some resources that are out there that if you're not confident about your abilities, that there is support systems out there to encourage you and give you the skills that you may need to run for office. So I just wanted to throw those out there as examples.
Thank you.
Yeah,